You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 21st of January, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioaryan.com. And just before I bring on my co-host, I will just remind listeners that you should be listening to this at radioaryan.com. This is not public propaganda, and we don't encourage people reposting it in areas where the general public can see it. And if they do so, they're doing so without my permission. Okay, as always today, we are welcoming Max Musson from Western Spring. Max, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, actually, yes. Trying to come to terms with my newfound fame.
Yeah, well, me as well. I mean, I wasn't expecting this. This reporter, Abdul Tahrir, had been trying to contact me, and I just thought, well, my normal policy is not to respond to the mainstream media. The whole point of having alternative media is that we don't need to use their media. Anything that we have to say, we can put on our own website, on our own podcasts, and then it can't be taken out of context. It can't be cherry picked, because we know that that's what they're going to do. They tried to contact me, so I ignored them. And then I heard that they tried to contact you as well, Max. And unfortunately, they were able to get hold of you. So before we actually go into the article itself, how did you find the actual reporter himself? What did you think of him?
Well, he was polite enough. He was very keen to dig for information, and I wise enough to know not to feed information to members of the mass media, because, as you just said, they almost always distort what's said and just use it as propaganda against us without any attempt to be fair-minded in terms of the way that they use that information.
Yeah, you're quite an old hand at this, being involved in the BNP for many years and running Western Spring. Sure. Have you had run-ins with the reporters before at all, or was this your first time?
I've been contacted by reporters before, and generally speaking, the way that they behave is very, very similar. They always telephone and try to present themselves as somebody who's going to be doing an article in which they're going to mention you, or they're going to mention somebody that you know, and they ask questions where they're trying to dig for information, and if you don't play ball, then they start to become a little bit more hostile, and then start to mention things they're going to say about you that you may not like, and just to sort of try and provoke you into saying something effectively, and that's pretty much what they do, and so at the point where they stop being polite, then the thing to do is to, if you have started speaking to them already, is just to sign off at that point and just let them go their own way.
I know we have spoken before about the fact that they always go to hope not hate for comment on nationalist issues, and really they should go to nationalists to get a comment on nationalist issues. So at least this guy did manage to contact you. Did you feel that he actually represented what you said to him fairly?
I don't think so. You said that you think that they ought to come to us for information, and in a perfect world, yes, they should. But the fact of the matter is that they don't come to us for information so that they can present a story that is fair in the same way that they would with regard to any other subject matter. They solely come to us so that they can dig for information that can then be used can then be turned against us and used to portray us in the poorest possible light. And so, you know, any kind of extenuating factors that may exist with regard to anything that they take issue with, so that they don't really they're not really interested in those extenuating factors. They're just interested in finding as much information that they can present as unattractively about you as possible, and so there really isn't a lot of point in talking to them. And so, you know, I try to be polite if they contact me. I don't provide them with any information that they dig for, and that's it really. I think probably the best approach is to say as little to them as possible and just send them on their way as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think anything that I have to say to the mainstream media is all in a section in the sidebar. It's right at the front page, at the top of the site. It says important, and it is important. And if journalists want to know what we have to say about anything, just read that disclaimer. And also listeners should read that disclaimer, because it says what we are all about, what we're doing here at Radio Aryan. And he did actually quote part of that. Fair enough. The BBC quoted part of that, and I'd much rather they just quoted that. That's my response to the mainstream media. Well, let's have a look at what they had to say about us. The headline was "Exposed: British Racists Behind Vile, Secretive Neo-Nazi Radio Station That the Government Cannot Shut Down." Well, he's not really exposing us. The BBC used us before as part of their documentary that they recently did on. I can't even remember the name of the group now that the documentary is about. They're so insignificant. And also, we've been featured in Huffington Post, I think, about a year ago. They said something about us. Why would the government want to shut down people talking to one another? We're not inciting violence. We're not inciting trouble. We utterly condemn any violence that's associated with nationalism, and that is in the disclaimer. And what you're essentially talking about here is a private conversation between two people over a telephone that's recorded and that is made available should people wish to listen to it. And that's the effective thing. Should people wish to listen to it? Nobody is forcing anyone to listen to it. And we advise people not to play it to people that could be offended by it. And I think this is the point here. And I can give an analogy here of, say, somebody was to show a child pornography. Would it be the person that showed that child the pornography that had broken any laws? Or would it be the publisher of the pornography? It would be the person that showed the pornography to the child that was in the wrong. If I was to go out and paste sections from Mein Kampf talking about Jews on the lampposts, would it be me that was in trouble for doing that? Or would it be the publishers that were in trouble for doing that? It would be me that was in trouble for doing that. So the Daily Mail, by making our content and showing it to people that may be offended by it, they're the ones that are causing the offence, not us. And that's the way that I see it.
I don't think you should draw an analogy between the conversations we have and pornography.
No.
Entirely different.
They are entirely different, and also maybe before that, we should also put aside the social ramifications of pornography. But I'm just saying, as a position in law, basically of you know, offending people, and it was also it was also found out, maybe I could use better words for that as well. But at the Alison Chablow trial, that the reason why she was charged with causing gross offence is because she uploaded her videos to YouTube. If she'd uploaded them to her own site, that would have been a different matter. And the Radio Aryan content is at our own site. We're not on Facebook. We have a Twitter account, but that is locked so that I can vet anybody that wants to see our tweets. We don't have any intention of offending people. Far from it. Okay, let's get more into this article. British far-right extremists are broadcasting vile racist programs on a sickening neo-Nazi radio station, but government regulators are powerless to shut it down. Well, yes, we're not a television station broadcasting on, you know, the satellite TV or cable TV or using the official radio. We're using the internet. We're using our own internet real estate, basically. It's effectively us saying, well, this is our house and people can come into our house to hear what we're saying if they like. We're not on the street doing it. We're not using the public broadcasting to do it. So, of course, government regulators are powerless to shut it down. Transmitted from a secret location in the UK, Radio Aryan describes Jews as yid flies, black men as Negro rapists, and broadcasts daily readings from Hitler's Mein Kampf. No, we don't broadcast daily readings from Hitler's Mein Kampf. I don't know where he got that from. We would only call black men a Negro rapist if it was a Negro rapist that had been charged with rape and found guilty of it. And Yid Flies, I believe that was just a cartoon, a cartoon image. That's not really representative of what we do here. The station's hate-filled shows also attack Muslims and homosexuals, and its website carries a sinister picture of Theresa May with a noose around her neck. Well, that does sound sinister. But if you actually look at what it is, it's a cartoon picture. And actually, what is far more sinister is the fact that Tony Blair did away with treason being against the law so that nobody could be charged with it. I find that far more sinister than a cartoon picture. And that wording is actually underneath this cartoon. If you're going to say that is sinister, it's no more sinister than Tom and Jerry. Is that sinister to cats? That's certainly not a death threat. That is saying that treason used to be a capital offence, and politicians nowadays don't seem to have any care at all about breaking these treason laws. I mean, just handing sovereignty over to the European Union, that's treason. Have you got anything to say about these, Max?
No, I think what you said is fair enough. I think that... again, you know, the sentence that you've read out shows quite clearly that the journalist has cherry picked a number of things to include in a sentence to portray Radio Aryan in the poorest possible light, and when you look at each one of those things individually, it becomes insignificant, and that's really what I've got to say, I suppose.
Well, it shows his intention, doesn't it? I mean, you could see his intention from his messages to me. It was, we are going to say that you espouse racist views, that you're an anti-Semite, la-di-da-di-da. Why won't you come and talk to us? Well, because you're just going to call me names. I'm not an ethnic minority. I don't really care what names people call me. It's not the end of the world if somebody calls me rude names. And that's basically all he had to say is, we're going to call you rude names. Please come and talk to us. No, I don't like talking to people who call me rude names, to be honest.
And there have been lots of instances in the past where people who have been nationalist activists have actually entertained these invitations from the mass media, and the mass media have done things like have a reporter live with somebody for a complete fortnight or something, and then they will compress all of the things that they're able to twist and misrepresent against that person that they have discovered over that fortnight into a half an hour program, and then produce it as a smear program, which is what they always do, instead of taking a broader view of what the person's doing, why they're doing it, and looking at some of the good aspects of the person. And that's something they never do in the case of nationalists. They never look for the good that somebody's trying to do. They always just assume, right from the very beginning, the worst possible motives, and then they, as we've already established, cherry pick the things that they can use, that they can misrepresent and take out of context in the most extreme way, in order to produce what effectively is a smear program. And the article that's been produced in the Sunday Mail today was, you know, quite obviously a smear article with no attempt to present any kind of unbiased account of anything. Indeed, there was actually no reason for the article to actually be produced, because, you know, it's not as if we're actually a threat to anybody. It's not as if, you know, we're doing something that's illegal. we're having conversations, and we sometimes express views that some people disagree with and some people might find offensive if they were to come and find the website and seek out what our views are. But we're not broadcasting these views, and as we've already established, we're not breaking any laws in doing what we're doing.
Yeah, then they're never fair-handed or honest. And the reason for that is that they're all a part of the National Union for Journalists, and their guidelines say they're not allowed to be fair and even and honest reporting of nationalists. They are only ever allowed to use any of our quotes if they can show them in a negative view, and they constantly have to try to challenge what we say. So what is the point in trying to have a conversation with somebody like that? And each of these quotes, we can pick out what he's done to try and mischaracterize them. The next one, he has close links to National Action. That's supposed to be me, a neo-Nazi group banned in 2016, and is a close associate of David Duke, the former head of the Ku Klux Klan in the US, who regularly appears on Radio Aryan. Well, I've never spoken to David Duke before in my life. We simulcast David Duke and Stormfront Radio from Rents Radio, but they're nothing to do with Radio Aryan. We do like to simulcast other people's podcasts. We like to help out other people in the movement, but it doesn't mean that they're at Radio Aryan podcasts. The Radio Aryan podcasts are clearly listed on our site. Anything else that's on the radio schedule, it's bootlegs, essentially, and they are listed as such. They're not listed as Radio Aryan content. It's just stuff that's also on the stream, so that we can keep nationalists entertained all day, basically, by listening to that instead of having to watch all the anti-white stuff on the television or on the radio. And this bit about close links to National Action, I've never had close links to National Action. We've interviewed Ben Raymond and Alex Davies when National Action was a completely legal organisation, and so did the BBC. The BBC did a television programme on Ben Raymond. They've got just as close links to National Action as I have, and the organisation doesn't exist anymore. The people that I interviewed, Ben Raymond and Alex Davies, closed up shop. They shut National Action down, and as far as I know, that is all National Action was Ben Raymond, Alex Davies, and the people that joined up with them as National Action. I know since then there have been other people that have been arrested, accused, found guilty of being members of it, but they're not people that have ever appeared on anything to do with Radio Aryan. We have discussed the news stories because we do cover current affairs here at Radio Aryan. That's one of our aims, is to cover current affairs. So we have discussed the news stories, but we certainly don't have any close links to them. Continuing, a Mail on Sunday investigation has discovered that an ex-city banker and a former British Army officer, both leaders of extreme right-wing organisations in Britain, are major contributors to the radio station that has been pumping out racist bile 24 hours a day for more than 2 years. Well, that's news to me that there are two people that are contributing to the radio station. And he's talking about you here, Max, and also Jez Turner. You've never given us any contributions. Your contribution is the time that you give, and that's the same with every one of our radio hosts who gives their time for free. We're not Marxists here. We don't only do things if we're paid. We do them out of a duty to our race. That's why we do this. Have you got anything to say about this, Max?
He's obviously lifted the suggestion that I've been financing Radio Aryan from Hope Not Hate. I mean, Hope Not Hate tried to create this impression every time they mention me that I'm some sort of mysterious, wealthy Svengali character who's lurking behind just about everything that ever happens. And I think it was in 2016 or 2017 they listed me as the most dangerous nationalist in the country, and kind of tried to give the impression that nothing happens in the world of nationalism unless I sanction it, which is a complete load of tosh. I'm somebody who is working to promote the best interests of the people of this country, the British people. But when it comes to being a secret Svengali financier of other groups, well, that just isn't the case. You know, we do sometimes give money to worthy causes where nationalists have suffered as a result of persecution, and we have provided a small amount of sponsorship to some organisations, but we're certainly not a major sponsor that would warrant me being labelled as a sort of, as I say, a Svengali kind of secret financier. That's just preposterous.
And that's financing out of your philanthropic organisation, Western Spring, isn't it, that you're sponsoring?
Oh, absolutely,
for?
Yes. I mean, Western Spring, we have regular contributions from our members, and they contribute that money with the intention that it will be used to further the cause of British nationalism, and that in the knowledge that some of it will be used for a philanthropic purposes to assist other nationalist organisations as well. And, you know, that's what we do. But the way that I'm portrayed, and particularly using the term that I'm a sort of ex-city banker or ex-city financier, and that's just like leaping into the realms of fantasy there. You know, the next thing that they'll be accusing me of being on the board of Goldman Sachs or something like that. You know, it's just preposterous. They're just trying to build this up to try and make something out of nothing, really, just so that they can scare people and run a smear story for no real reason. As I said earlier on, you know, there is no reason why they should have run this smear story. It doesn't serve any purpose. It doesn't inform the public, because virtually everything that's in it is just a concoction of half-truths and innuendo. And had they not run the story, there would be there would be no adverse impact on the British public. They haven't served any purpose or produced any benefit for the public by printing the story in the way they have, apart from the fact they've just smeared us, which may please their sponsors, whoever they may be, because obviously somebody who doesn't like us is probably sponsoring the Daily Mail, but they're not doing anything to for the advantage of the general public.
Well, I think it shows that they've got links there with Hope Not Hate, because, you know, the information that they've managed to drag out in their investigation basically comes from the Hope Not Hate blog. It doesn't come from looking at Radio Aryan. I mean, the idea that you've never given me any contributions, and neither is Jez Turner. I mean, what are they saying? Jez Turner is a contributor to Radio Aryan. Jez Turner has been in prison for the last year. He's come out from prison and he's under draconian conditions where he can't talk to any nationalists, has to stay in a bail hostel, all the same conditions that Jada Franson was put under. And they say major contributor. Maybe they think because he was a co-host a couple of times, really not that many times. Jez Turner did a few Daily Nationalists with me. He was an excellent co-host. He's a very good commenter on what's going on around us. But he hasn't done that for almost a year. So I would hardly say he was a major contributor, and he certainly never ever sent us any funds. We do have a Bitcoin wallet, and if people wish to contribute to the radio station, they can. And that's entirely how it's funded, is from our listeners sending us Bitcoin. And as I say, we all give our time for free. It's not like this is, you know, a major financial enterprise that costs a lot of money. It does cost time, and everybody involved in it gives their time, basically. So we do appreciate, contributions. Continuing, but astonishingly, broadcast regulator Ofcom is unable to silence their rants because the programs are transmitted over the internet and mobile phone apps, which it has no power to police. So what is the story here? And the comments that have been left underneath the article are pretty much saying that. They're saying, well, great, thanks a lot to Daily Mail. You've just told us where we can go to listen to this. And so I don't understand why they'd be doing this. They're saying that Ofcom can't shut them down. So what we thought we'd do is make their existence known to the general public so they can all listen to them. You know, if they want Ofcom to shut us down because they don't want people to listen to us, then why are they writing a story about us? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a law of unintended consequences, isn't it? You know, they feel like they have to meddle. They feel that out of spite, because we are expressing views that they disagree with, that they have to try and do something to cause us problems. And yet, in reality, all they're doing is shining a light and showing everybody where we are and how they can contact us and listen to our views should they want to. And the mistake they make is that they assume that that their dislike of our views is shared by the general public. But the fact of the matter is that the level of hysteria that they show is really a reflection of how attractive they actually fear our views are to the general public. But they're, you know, as you say, shooting themselves in the foot by highlighting where people can find us.
Well, our listenership has doubled overnight, basically. It's doubled. And we don't, you know, we don't really want to advertise our stuff. We want nationalists to listen to us. This isn't public propaganda. This isn't aimed at people that don't know anything about nationalism. I think it's very irresponsible of them to do this. People could now be listening to it and they could be offended. They may find some of our stuff a little bit too extreme, and we don't want that. We want nationalists to listen to us. That's who it's aimed at. So it's very irresponsible of them to do this. And as you say, they're just shooting themselves in the foot. MP Stephen Doughty, and that's the MP that the BBC spoke to, a member of the Home Affairs Select Committee, has demanded action from police, and an investigation by counter-terrorism officers has been launched. Counter-terrorism? How in any way is people having conversations about what's going on around us, how can that be linked to terrorism? How can that be terrorism? And our website is quite open. The police are welcome to look through it. And I've always assumed, ever since we first started, that police or intelligence would be looking through it. And if they found something that they thought was illegal, then I'm sure they would have been in touch. And they haven't. But 2 years after the station was founded, it was still broadcasting its sickening material last night, including disgusting claims that black people prefer witch doctors over hiring lawyers, and pornography is a Jewish enterprise intended to damage non-Jews. Well, let's just take a look at that. Last week, I did a podcast, which was about a particular case that actually came from a Daily Mail article. And the headline of the Daily Mail article was, "Parents who tried to cast black magic spells on police and medics after hiring witch to perform genital mutilation on daughter 3 had name of ex-CPS chief inside a lime in a freezer in bid to curse her." And that is basically saying that these black people did prefer a witch doctor over searching for a good lawyer. And it's there in the headline of the Daily Mail. We use the Daily Mail articles a lot in order to get our news that we discuss here. The Daily Mail, the Daily Express, Breitbart, they are the main news sources that we use. So by saying we're making disgusting claims here, our claims are based upon the evidence in his own newspaper's articles. And where he's talking about pornography being a Jewish enterprise, that comes from the Orthodox Nationalist podcast on pornography. The Orthodox Nationalist podcast is produced, well, I'm the producer, but it is created by Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, who is a doctor of philosophy. He's also an Eastern Orthodox priest, and he's very scrupulous about providing all the sources for everything that he claims. And it is quite an open secret, as it were, that the majority of pornography is produced by Jews. They are on record as saying the reason for why they are doing it as well, because they want to get their own back on Catholics, get their own back on the Christians. They're quite open about why they do it. There have been plenty of books that have been written about it. This is verifiable stuff. So basically, what the Daily Mail have done here is made the general public aware of that, so they will look and find out about it for themselves. Continuing, "The station is easily accessible to anyone who goes to its website. There, as well as its live broadcasts, Radio Aryan offers a library of hundreds of programs that users can listen to at the click of a button, including The Daily Nationalist, Truthful Out Radio, and This Week on the Alt-Right." Well, This Week on the Alt-Right is Mark Collett's podcast. It's not a Radio Aryan podcast. It's available on YouTube. And we help to promote that by putting the audio on our stream and providing a link to that. And it's video. It's not audio. We deal with audio. So once again, he's got that wrong. He's basically just giving the tags out to people so they can look up Truthful Out Radio and look up the Daily Nationalist. While the titles only hint at the extreme views, the Mail on Sunday has uncovered content that is deeply shocking. Much of the hateful material is obsessively anti-Semitic. One series is called Biological Jew, and its webpage features extraordinarily inflammatory articles and pictures. In one pernicious cartoon, a caricature Jewish man uses his long hooked nose to stab another man in the back, under the headline, "Beware the dreaded sting of the parasite king, the Yid fly is loose." The article reads, "There are many similarities between the Jew's effect on the nation he lives among and the parasite's effect on its host. Where you find one parasite, you soon find many. And once a few Jews get into society, it won't be long before they start advocating for more to be allowed in." Well, apart from the sensationalism of that, that's actually taken from a book by Eustace Mullins called The Biological Jew, which you can buy on Amazon. You can buy it at Goodreads. You can check it out at Eustace Mullins' own site. I believe Eustace Mullins passed away a few years back, but he still has a website, and you can read his book on there. And there are various other archives with the PDF on there. And that comes from an article from 3 years back, 4 years back. Basically, that's what he's using there, where I read the book aloud. So what are they saying? You're not allowed to read books aloud? Okay, it may be offensive to some people, but there again, it's not something that's put out for the general public to view. It's something that was put out for Radio Aryan listeners to listen to. And it was from years back. Continuing, the vile screed blames Jews for the promotion of mutilated homosexuals, and then he's got transsexuals in brackets, as role models for children. Well, this is being promoted as role models for children. We don't necessarily blame it on the Jews. This is another point here, actually. We don't blame everything on the Jews. We don't blame everything on the blacks. We blame all these symptoms on our own actions as the white race for allowing them to happen. We blame our white traitors that are in government for allowing immigration, for allowing these laws that try to prevent us from talking about these things and prevent us from criticizing ethnic minorities. We blame our own people fairly and squarely for allowing this to happen. So no, we don't blame Jews for this. We know that Jews are only a tiny minority. We white people are still the majority in our own countries, and we are allowing this to happen. And in the larger scheme of things, I see all of this as consequences of actions from quite some time back. And I believe that the nation pays for the sins of its forefathers, the same way as the nation can benefit from the actions of its forefathers. So no, we don't blame Jews for that. They may be a part of it, a very prominent part of it, but we blame white people for allowing it to happen. Another broadcast discusses the case of a British black singer accused of multiple counts of rape. And that story, again, was in the Daily Mail. But the one that I covered was actually taken from The Sun. Elsewhere on the Radio Aryan website, a picture of the singer is used with a disgusting question. Why do Negroes bother with tattoos when you can't even see them? That's not a disgusting question. It's a rhetorical question, because you can't actually see what the tattoos are. I still don't understand why they do it. An accompanying article gives voice to the horrific claim. Today, 60% of black boys and girls think that it is not rape to force sex onto someone you know. A quarter of all schoolchildren in Soweto admit to enjoying gang rape. 1 in 10 admit to raping before the age of 10, and nearly half of all South African blacks admitted to raping someone. Well, all of those are statistics taken from Wikipedia. This horrific claim are actually acknowledged statistics that are on the Wikipedia page about sexual violence in South Africa. And I've actually dug out exactly what these statistics were and exactly where they came from. This is the first one. Among children, a 2007 survey by CIET found 60% of both boys and girls aged 10 to 19 years old thought it was not violent to force sex upon someone they knew. while around 11% of boys and 4% of girls admitted to forcing someone else to have sex with them. So they say it's that 60% think that it is not violent to rape someone. And that's taken from Oprah Scandal Rocks South Africa from Time magazine from the 15th of May 2011. The next one, in a related survey conducted among 1,500 schoolchildren in the Johannesburg township of Soweto, a quarter of all the boys interviewed said that jackrolling, a term for gang rape, was fun. That's taken from South Africa's Rape Shock, and that was on the BBC News, 19th of January, 1999. The next one, a Gauteng study conducted in 2010 revealed that 37.4% of men admitted to raping a woman. That's almost 50%, as I said, almost 50%. And that comes from genderlinks.org.za. Next one, nearly 3 out of 4 men who admitted rape stated they had first forced a woman or girl into sex before the men were the age of 20, and nearly 1 in 10 admitted to doing so before the age of 10. And they've changed the wording of that one. You can hear the exact wording in the podcast that I did last week on it, but Wikipedia have actually changed the wording of that one because it was a little bit unclear. So they're basically saying 1 in 10 out of the 3 out of 4 men that admit rape. So rather than it being 1 in 10, it's actually 1 in 20. But that's Wikipedia's own fault for not clearly making it clear what they were talking about. And that comes from Understanding Men's Health and Use of Violence, Interface of Rape and HIV in South Africa. So you can see that all of those things that he's accused me of saying that are horrific, these horrific claims, are basically accepted statistics. And at the end of the Wikipedia webpage, it does say that the mainstream media doesn't seem to want to discuss this. It seems to shy away from it. And South Africa is not very happy about that because these rape figures are being hidden. So I'm backed up there. And this article proves it, that they don't want to discuss it.
Yeah, I've not been commenting while you've been going through these things because the accusations that were made in the Daily Mail article weren't actually sort of pointed at me. They were pointed at things that other content that you'd included on the website that I hadn't been involved in. But it's interesting to listen to your defence of why you've included this information. And again, I think that the Daily Mail article has probably done is, again, it's made people aware of the fact that these statistics do exist, and all the people that have come to listen to this podcast this week as a result of having seen the Daily Mail article will be introduced to these statistics afresh. And so, again, it's a situation where the Daily Mail are shooting themselves in the foot or shooting their cause in the foot if their intention is to stop people from hearing these kind of views.
Yeah, I mean these are facts, and he must have read through the article to collect his quotes and then ignored the fact that there are certain sections of it that are highlighted because they link to the exact quotes. He could have just clicked the link for himself and seen the quotes. Maybe some of our listeners aren't aware. When you look at the articles, every piece of writing that is in block lettering, that is actually a link to the article that is being talked about. So that is the reference. That's the proof that what we're saying is true. Click that link and it will take you to the statistics. So you can check it for yourself. Reporter didn't bother to do that, or else he doesn't want people to know that these are real statistics. And then he finishes with, the article adds the only way to properly deal with this problem is to deport them all and leave them to their own habits in their own countries. And I would say, well, yes, that is the only way to deal with it. The podcast itself showed that 200 years ago were the first reports of this sort of activity going on. It's now 2019, and you've still got almost half of them admitting to having raped someone, and we're importing these people into our countries. And that is in South Africa. That used to be a white country. You can't say that the blacks there weren't educated. They weren't exposed to Western ways. They were, and yet they are still just as bad as they were 200 years ago, when you have the same reports in Negroes of Negroland, a book that was produced for the American courts at the time. So that is the proof that that is the only way to deal with it. And I don't suggest that violence has to be used to deport them. You can offer them incentives to go back to their own countries. You can offer them money to go back to their own countries. And the majority of them, I think, would take it if they were also prevented from accessing welfare, education and medical and their medical needs in our countries. It doesn't need to be done in a violent way. The next bit talks about Jez Turner. Ex-soldier Jeremy Bedford Turner is a major contributor to Radio Aryan. His far-right group, London Forum, is listed as a sponsor. It's not listed as a sponsor. There's an advert that says, sponsor us. And if you click that advert, it takes you to our Bitcoin wallet. And then under that, it has an advert for London Forum. And under that, it has an advert for Western Spring. I don't really understand how he could think that this meant that London Forum was a sponsor, unless he wasn't actually able to read English and thought that it didn't say sponsor us, but said sponsors. So I really don't think he's really that bright, to be honest, with his investigation. Bedford Turner, who also goes by the name of Jez Turner, has recently come out of prison after serving a one-year sentence for stirring up racial hatred. The fascist, who served in the Royal Signals and is fluent in Pashto and Arabic, was jailed after making an inflammatory speech outside Downing Street. He urged soldiers to rise up and free England of Jewish control. At his trial, he said Jack the Ripper and the Cray twins were Jews and that the Jewish race was responsible for both world wars. He could not be reached for comment last night. And that really shows you the tone of this. I mean, he just brazenly insults Jez and says, the fascist. I mean, it's not capitalized. He's not saying, I'm calling him this because these are his political views. He's just outright insulting him and calling him a fascist. I mean, that's not journalistic integrity, is it? To do something like that, just blatantly call someone a name there.
Well, I think that it reveals the fact that the journalist had pretty much a closed mind and had already made his mind up what he was going to write before he'd even begun. Actually, though, I think as far as fascism is concerned, I don't think Jez would be that insulted by being called a fascist. He'd probably be quite pleased and proud to be called a fascist, to be quite honest. But as you say, it does reveal the fact that, well, as I've just said, it does reveal the fact that the journalist had already made his mind up before he wrote the article to address Jez in that way, pretty much demonstrates that.
Yeah, well, you know, he means it as an insult. The author means it as an insult there, the same as he meant it as an insult when he was calling me an anti-Semite and a racist. He continues, the station was founded as the UK's version of Radio Aryan in the US. No, it wasn't. Radio Aryan was just a term that I thought up. By a man who goes under the pseudonym of Sven Longshanks, the nickname of Edward I, who expelled Jews from England in 1290. Well, that's news to me. I didn't know Edward's nickname was Sven Longshanks. That's actually his name, was Edward Longshanks. So, again, this guy really doesn't know what he's talking about. The king was called Sven Longshanks. Well, I guess that's quite a compliment, really. He continues, Sven Longshanks' views reveal him to be a rabid anti-Semite and racist. Now, I don't think I'm rabid. I don't sound like I've been bitten by a rabid dog. He preaches the superiority of the white race and praises Christianity for making the Jew an enemy. I don't know where he got that from. I think every member of a race thinks that their race is the best race. They should do. They should be proud of their race. They should believe in it. The same as anyone who supports a football team thinks that their football team is the best. I've never understood why it should be wrong to think that your people are the best. Because that encourages you to be the best person that you can possibly be, rather than thinking your people are the worst.
Interestingly, though, you know, he's throwing criticism at you for the assumption he's made that you view Jews as an enemy, and yet when we see the plethora of complaints and whining and whinging that comes from representatives of the Jewish community in this country accusing everybody of being anti-Semitic, accusing, you know, politicians and the general public, etc. Everybody's being anti-Semitic in some way or another. And yet he doesn't think that Jews accusing non-Jews of being an enemy, he doesn't regard that as being deplorable in the way that he regards the suggestion that a Christian might view a Jew as an enemy as being deplorable.
Yeah, that's a good point there. I mean, the Talmud says that Christians are enemies of Jews. I mean, Jews are supposed to curse Christians as part of their actual religion. I don't think Christianity made the Jews into an enemy. Christianity was a response to Judaism. I think Jews fulfill a necessary purpose. They teach us what we shouldn't be doing, basically. They tempt us, they encourage us to do things that we shouldn't be doing, and by doing that we're able to learn the difference between right and wrong, between good and evil, and we should reject usury, we should reject pornography, we should reject gluttony and drunkenness, and we should reject Hollywood and all these degenerate things, which, like it or not, are associated with Jews, and they often, we can find quotes of them being proud of it, but I see them as a necessary force, to be honest, to for the struggle in life, so that we can show our virtue. We struggle against them, but that's a little bit meta-political to get into. Continuing here, in August 2016, he interviewed Alex Davies, 24, the head of terrorist group National Action. Well, no, in 2016, National Action weren't a terrorist group, and as soon as they were proscribed, Alex Davies and Ben Raymond both shut the group down and had nothing to do with it ever since. So they weren't the head of terrorist group, the head of National Action before it was proscribed and made into a terrorist group. I did interview Alex Davies. 4 months later, it became the first far-right organisation to be outlawed in Britain since the end of the Second World War. The government took action after it praised the killing of Labour MP Joe Cox, who was stabbed to death by right-wing fanatic Thomas Mayer outside her constituency surgery. Well, National Action didn't praise the killing of Labour MP Joe Cox. I believe a member of National Action with a Twitter account did, and they may have used the words that the killer of Joe Cox used somewhere on the website, but I don't think they praised it. They made a joke out of it, a very bad taste joke out of it. And to call Thomas Mayer a right-wing fanatic is just not true. The BBC showed us inside his house, they showed us his videos, they showed us his books. There were things like Schindler's List, The World at War. There was no revisionist history in there. He was a member of a South African group about 10 years ago, but he had no online presence. He wasn't a member of the National Front or the BNP. He certainly wasn't a listener to Radio Aryan. Nobody knew anything about him. So I don't think it's right to call him a right-wing fanatic. He was somebody with a mental illness, I think. He certainly had nothing to do with the internet. Do you want to make a comment there on Thomas Mayer here, Max?
Yeah, well, Thomas Mayer was a loner who may have had some contact with some nationalist groups a long way back in the past. But from what I've drawn from the accounts of his attack on Joe Cox, he regarded Joe Cox as being somebody that he wanted to hold responsible for the fact that he was being rehoused and felt threatened as a result of that. Now, it's quite that there were also newspaper accounts of the fact that he did try to seek some sort of counselling service just the day before he launched the attack on Joe Cox. And so I think he was somebody who had who felt very inadequate, who felt threatened, and who had obsessed about this, and his mind had probably festered for some time, and then he just decided to go out and kill Joe Cox. And the point is that when people commit crimes like this, they very often try to, instead of just committing a plain and simple murder, which is very often the case, when killings of this type take place, and there are, you know, quite often killings in America that the media are keen to rant about, where firearms are used, very often the people who actually commit the killings, they like to link what they've done to some sort of a political cause, because they feel it gives their what in other respects is just a simple cold-blooded murder, tends to give that cold-blooded murder a veneer of respectability, the fact that they claim to have done it for a cause, when in reality they've done it because they were inadequate people. And if Thomas Mayer hadn't been that kind of a person, had he actually been a right-wing activist, then he would have been active within nationalist organisations in this country, and he would have then found the political activity that we engage in, he would have found that to be fulfilling, and that would have then stopped him from festering in the way that he did. But because he was isolated and had no links with anybody who sympathised with his position, he went and committed a really stupid and cruel offence.
Yeah, he wasn't active at all. And if he'd listened to Radio Aryan, he would see that we totally condemn actions like that as just being harmful to nationalism. It just causes a clampdown on nationalism, and it just makes the rest of us look bad, basically. It's a ridiculous thing to do. I mean, we have a chat room so that nationalists can talk to other nationalists, so you don't need to feel alone and isolated, and people can listen to our podcasts each day, and again, and not feel isolated and alone, and I think that leads to a lot of it, is you get these isolated individuals who think of themselves as lone wolves and go out and do some kind of price tag attack, sometimes end up killing themselves, and it's of no benefit to us whatsoever. It just makes us all look like that, and it usually causes clampdowns on free speech. Continuing, Radio Aryan describes the imprisoned members of National Action and other neo-Nazi groups as prisoners of war, and encourages its listeners to write to them in jail. I think we were referring to them as political prisoners now. Yes, we do encourage our listeners to write to nationalists that have been jailed, because they're part of the nationalist community. And it's the Christian thing to do, is to write to people while they're in prison. It's out of charity. It should not be seen as any condoning of their activities. It's got nothing to do with their activities. It's the fact that they are nationalists and they are in jail. That's why we encourage people to write to them. Max, we've got some quotes about you coming up next. Another key contributor of Radio Aryan is Max Musson, 65, an ex-city financier who was previously an organiser for the BNP. Musson now runs a far-right group called Western Spring. It appears as a sponsor of Radio Aryan on its website and is accused of running military-style training camps for neo-Nazis in the Brecon Beacons. In a recent broadcast, Musson warned of violence if a hard Brexit is not implemented. Quote, a point is going to be reached at some point in the future when there is going to be some significant physical challenge to the existing political establishment. Close quote, he said. Do you want to?
Yeah, it's again, they've used this, tried to sort of create this idea that I'm an ex-city financier, which is just used in order to try and make me appear to be a far more significant and sinister character than I might otherwise be, because ordinary members of the general public quite often regard ex-city financiers, they regard city financiers as people who indulge in a kind of financial black magic to make money that they don't understand how it happens. So therefore, you can use that sort of title to make anybody appear to be sinister. I am active in promoting Western Spring. I'm one of the main people involved in Western Spring, The accusation that we've run military-style training camps is, again, a distortion of the truth. The fact of the matter is that for a period of time, there was a sister organisation created, which was called Legion, and Legion was intended to be a youth organisation, and as a youth organisation, they organised events that were intended to attract young people, and so these events were kind of outward bound weekends where people could go and could hike and indulge in all sorts of things that were there for activities that were intended to promote physical culture and were intended to promote good health and to help those people in terms of the challenges that life throws at them. One of those key challenges is that it is attack by Antifa. And so at those outward bound weekends, there was instruction in how to defend yourself, and specifically instruction on how to defend yourself if you are being attacked by somebody carrying a knife. So there wasn't, you know, it's been alleged on other occasions that we were giving people training on how to use knives. No, we weren't. We were giving people training on how to defend themselves when they are attacked by somebody carrying a knife, because this is something that quite often happens in large cities. And in fact, one of the key pieces of advice that was given to those people that attended these weekends was that if you are attacked by somebody and they've got a knife and you haven't, the best thing that you can do is to run away. And that was a piece of advice given to us by a number of people who are martial arts experts, because, you know, if one person's got a knife and one person hasn't, the person with the knife obviously has a significant advantage, and it would be very, very foolish to engage in a fight with them when you're unarmed. And so the point is all of the activities at these weekends away, all of these weekends were intended to be to promote good virtues and values amongst the people who attended, were intended to give them activities out in the fresh air where they could become invigorated with a love of the countryside, and were intended to help them to protect themselves if they were attacked. Now the reason why this quotation is tacked on the end of this, so there's the insinuation that these were military style training camps, and then there is tacked on the end of that this quotation where I'm reported as saying a point is going to be reached at some point in the future where there is going to be some significant physical challenge to the existing political establishment. And that's been tacked on there to give the impression that these military-style training camps that are alleged to have happened are intended in some way to create some kind of insurgency in this country to pursue nationalist ends by violent means, which is an absolute travesty of what I actually said, because if you actually go back to the podcast that we did last week where I made that statement and you listen to the podcast, I talk about the way in which people who are key politicians in our political establishment, how they use the power that they have and how they use the influence that they have, very often in an unconstitutional way and in a way which betrays the interests of the general public. And I mentioned about how this was a dangerous situation, and I actually used the word, I described this situation as dangerous twice, because to indicate that it was what the politicians that are abusing their power is doing which is dangerous, and that it is causing the general public to lose respect for and to lose trust in our politicians. And I pointed out the fact that trust in politicians is at an all-time low, and I said if this process continues, i.e. the process of politicians shedding the respect and
going back on their word with Brexit. That was the main subject, wasn't it? It was them going back on their word with Brexit.
I wasn't actually even talking about Brexit. I was just talking generally about the situation where politicians behave in a way which in which the public loses respect for them and loses confidence in the legitimacy of the government they represent. And then I said, if this process continues and people's confidence in the legitimacy of government continues to fall, a point is going to be reached at some point in the future where there's going to be some significant physical challenge to the existing political establishment. Whether it is in this country or somewhere on the continent, it's going to come sooner or later unless the people who govern us at the moment decide to start playing by the rules that they've always claimed have been in place to ensure constitutionality. So I'm not making a threat And there is no connection between the sentence that I spoke last week and any alleged military style training camps. There are no plans to use skills learned at military style training camps in order to present a physical threat to the political establishment. What I'm pointing out is that the behaviour of politicians is likely to cause this, and then we only have to look, because today in the Sunday Mail, or the Mail on Sunday, there is an article which talks about France in flames. 84,000 yellow vest protesters take to the streets across six cities as they attack a bank and riot beside Napoleon's tomb in Paris on a tenth weekend of demonstrations. A bank was attacked, a government building was vandalised, and rioting broke out next to Napoleon Bonaparte's tomb as 84,000 anti-government yellow vests demonstrated all over France for the 10th week in a row. Protesters threw firecrackers, bottles and stones at police and used tear gas, water cannon, flash ball guns and baton charges to push them back at Les Invalides, where the body of the former French emperor and military leader lies in a sarcophagus underneath a golden dome. According to official figures, the biggest demonstrations on Saturday occurred in the southern city of Toulouse, where around 10,000 people took part. The demonstration turned violent as the evening fell, as protesters vandalised the bank and other shops. Eight people were injured and there were 23 arrests. There were also disturbances in Bordeaux, Lyon, Marseille, and the local government building was attacked in Angers, northwest of Paris. And so what we have here is the Sunday Mail actually proving my prediction right. Now, I said that there would be a serious physical challenge if people continued to lose confidence in the legitimacy and constitutionality of government, and then here we are with the Sunday Mail actually holding up an instance where that's happened, where in France President Macron has been forced to make a number of concessions to the demonstrators, and the demonstrators aren't all right-wing demonstrators. The demonstrators are a mixture of people from the right and from the left who are fed up with being betrayed constantly and who've decided to go out into the streets and are chanting "Macron resign," as the Sunday Mail article tells. "Resign Macron," the crowd chanted as they called for President Emmanuel Macron to resign, throwing bottles and any other missiles they could find. The vests have been protesting since November 17th, and despite a range of concessions by President Macron, including scrapping green taxes and diesel and petrol, continue to call for him to step down. Protesters have been joined by extremists from the far right and the ultra left, as well as anarchists intent on causing as much damage as possible. Crisis-ridden Mr. Macron has not only climbed down on the imposing green surcharges, but increased the national minimum wage by 7% and scrapped taxes on bonuses. But Yellow Vests said their protests would continue indefinitely as they campaigned for even more concessions. The independent Mr. Macron, leader of the Republic En Marche party, won the French presidential elections in a landslide in 2017, but is now dubbed the president of the rich, with polls showing his popularity rating to just 18%. So again, as that article goes on, it just again demonstrates that the prediction I made was right, that at some point in the future, and it actually happened much quicker than I expected or anticipated, there was a significant physical challenge. I think 84,000 yellow vest people protesting all over France is a significant physical challenge when they're throwing bottles and things at the police. And it's all as a result of people losing confidence and losing respect for the political establishment in France, and no longer having any confidence in the legitimacy of President Macron's government. It didn't happen in this country, it happened in France. It's got absolutely nothing to do with me whatsoever. But there again, it happened apart from the fact that, and the only connection with me is the fact that I predicted this sort of thing would happen somewhere in Europe before too long.
You know, if it can happen in France, it can happen here. And it's down to, as you say, people losing their faith in the government. They just do love to misquote people.
And, of course, it can happen here because, again, on the Mail website, it's got another article which says scuffles break out as British yellow vests march through Leeds in protest at being treated like nothing and against corrupt government. Scuffles have broken out in Leeds as British yellow vests march through the city in protest at being treated like nothing and against a corrupt government. The Mail repeats. Around 150 were seen in the city this afternoon, with West Yorkshire Police deployed to keep the situation under control, leading to 6 arrests for offences, including assaulting a police officer. A Facebook page set for the event reads, "We are tired of being treated like nothing. We work our arses off to provide for our families. The cost of living increases with little increase in wages. Now is the time to stand up against this corrupt government. That's making the working class less better off." There's some poor grammar in those quotations, but they pretty well convey the fact that not only was I right about something like this happening on the continent, but I appear to be my prediction appears to be coming true with regard to this country. And you know, before anybody thinks that there may be some connection between myself or yourself or the organisations we represent and these yellow vest demonstrators, I have no connection whatsoever with anybody who's a yellow vest demonstrator. I understand why they're doing what they're doing, but it's got absolutely nothing to do with me. I just, in understanding why they're doing what they're doing, I appreciate that it's because they have lost confidence in the legitimacy of our current corrupt political establishment, and that's why they're doing what they're doing. And that's something that politicians in this country need to take account of and to start to behave differently if they want to stop this kind of thing from getting worse.
It's nothing to do with us. We will cover it because we cover the news, and I did indeed see that news story myself this morning. Continuing with these last bits of the article here, calling for the government to take action against Radio Arium. I mean, what action are they expecting the government to take? Dr. Jerry Gable, head of the anti-racist group Searchlight, said there has been evidence that impressionable individuals have listened to broadcasts on radios like this one and have gone on to commit terrorist acts. This station is the most admired among Nazis in the UK, and the authorities must close it down. Well, I'd like to see some of these people named that listened to broadcasts like ours and then went out and carried out terrorist acts, because I'm not aware of any. You can look back through the terrorist acts of the people that they say were far-right terrorists in Britain, and none of them listened to Radio Arian. None of them. Most of them didn't even have anything to do with the internet. Thomas Mayer didn't have anything to do with the internet. Darren Osborne, he was following Tommy Robinson on Twitter, and he'd only been doing that for 2 weeks. He certainly wasn't listening to podcasts.
I think as far as Jerry Gable is concerned, Jerry Gable has made his living out of overinflating and scaremongering where right-wing and nationalist organisations are concerned. Plus the fact is, I think he retired a few years back. I don't know how old he is, but I would think that some of the people that have been criticising Prince Philip for driving the advanced stage that he is might want to take a look at Jerry Gable and voice similar criticisms that his attempts to make relevant comments about current political events, because Jerry Gable is obviously completely out of touch.
And it is those organisations that encourage leftists to go out and attack nationalists, basically. It's Hope Not Hate that are the ones that publish addresses so that people can't hold conferences and people can't hold meetings. And if people can't meet up and there is nowhere for people to meet up and be sociable with other nationalists, then you do run the chance of people being isolated individuals and going out and doing stupid things. You know, that is part of not allowing people to talk about things. If people can't talk about things, they're far more likely to explode and do something stupid. So it's totally counterproductive to be calling for this. Nick Lowles, head of anti-racist group Hope Not Hate, said Radio Arian has become a platform for British Nazis to push out their dangerous and probably illegal hatred. It is vital the authorities immediately investigate the contents and the people behind it. I don't think what we put out is dangerous at all. It's maybe it's dangerous to political correctness. Maybe it's dangerous to the New World Order, because we highlight crimes that are being carried out against our people. I mean, that's all we do, is we highlight crimes. And I dare say that the authorities have been investigating the site. As I say, I've always assumed that the site has been investigated, is being investigated. And they won't find any incitement to hatred, incitement to violence on there. They will find that, in actual fact, we are, I think we're a good influence on nationalists. If they want nationalists not to go out and do stupid things and go out on in terrorist activities, then they should be quite happy to have Radio Aryan there, because we don't encourage that. We completely condone all of that, and we do our best to get people to just improve their lives and improve the lives of the people around them. We want young nationalists to be virtuous. We want them to be a good influence in their community, the sort of people that other young white lads can look up to, rather than people that are going to be involved in gangs or involved in drugs or any of the other degeneracy. I think we are a positive influence, and anyone who honestly looks at our content will realise that. I mean, it may be a bit shocking to people that aren't used to hearing it, but it's not aimed at those people, is it? It's aimed at nationalists. It's aimed at people that are used to using racial slurs, which we don't use. So it's not going to offend the people that we aim it at. A spokesman for Ofcom said Radio Aryan is an internet radio station. As such, it is not licensed by Ofcom or subject to our broadcasting rules. Neither are people's private telephone conversations subject to broadcasting rules. I mean, what they're saying here is, if you have an opinion that's not been officially okayed by the government, then it must be shut down. You can't have an alternative opinion and talk to people about it. Heaven forbid. Mr. Doughty, MP, raised his concerns about Radio Aryan with Home Secretary Sajid Javid and Security Minister Ben Wallace last month. Last night, Scotland Yard said the Welsh Counter-Terrorism Unit was investigating. So they are investigating, and they can't have found anything. You want to say something, Max?
Yeah, I think that they obviously haven't decided to take any action against you for the reason that we've already established, the fact that you're not doing anything wrong, and neither am I doing anything wrong in participating in these podcasts. But as you say, we're not broadcasting in the way that a radio station that would require a license from Ofcom would broadcast. We are providing a service for nationalists, which is effectively a private service. It's interesting that there was I'm conscious of the fact that we're probably coming towards the end of our time here, and that there was an interesting article I noticed in the news today, which relates to a Norfolk village called East Winch. And apparently they've had a red telephone box in East Winch, which has been converted into a mini kind of book swap kind of library, where people in the village can go and take books that they've read and that they've enjoyed and leave them on the shelves that are in this this telephone booth, and other people can come along and just swap the books that they've already read for the ones that they haven't read that are in here. And apparently somebody quite recently took some literature along there, which included a copy of Hitler's Mein Kampf and included a copy of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, together with a number of other books, which were on subjects that nationalists might have found interesting. And there was like a little bit of an uproar about this, caused by various people who live in the village. I imagine there must be somebody who is either an extreme left winger, or perhaps somebody who's a Jew that lives in the village that saw this and was found the presence of these books threatening, and of course the articles state that these books have been taken away, that there was a comment by somebody, I can't think who the name of the person was now, from the Board of Deputies, I think it was, who was said that these books should end up in the waste bin of history, and I think in the same way that there are these calls for Radio Erin to be closed down. So the same motivations are there which call for books of the sort that promote views that we might find interesting and that we might support to be taken out of circulation for the public. And I'd just like to quote the 19th century German Jewish poet Heinrich Heine, who wrote in his a play Almanzor, the famous admonition, where they burn books, they will also ultimately burn people. And I think that as far as that the books in this book swap are concerned, where they consign books to the waste bin of history, and where they try to shut down the broadcast of the transmission of views in the way that we do here with these podcasts, perhaps Heinrich Heine's warning will actually come true. And so members of the public should be alarmed that there are these people who are so intolerant that they want to shut down and prevent people such as us from actually having the conversations that we do. And it is a fear on the part of these people. These people claim to want to promote diversity, and they claim to want to promote diversity in all things. But the one diversity they don't want to promote is diversity of opinions and diversity of views. Because when anybody disagrees with them, anybody has a view which diverges from their view, or an opinion which diverges from their opinion, it's regarded as intolerable, and it's regarded as being, it's described in the way that this this Sunday Mail article has described it, as being sickening. You know, I can listen to people spouting views that I disagree with. I don't find those views sickening. I don't find myself wanting to vomit or anything of that sort. I'm quite happy if somebody wants to float an idea and have a discussion with me about a subject where their viewpoint differs diametrically from mine, and I'm quite prepared to have a discussion with people and to argue my case. I don't find that offensive. I don't find it sickening. I don't feel the need to shut that person up. And I just find it really strange and really sad that so many people within the mass media want to shut down debate on subjects and shut down opinions expressed by people simply because those people disagree with them.
They're modern-day book burners. I think that's a good analogy.
That's right, they are modern-day book burners.
It's a good analogy that you've got there. Mustn't deny that Western Spring was a sponsor of Radio Erin, but admitted he was a guest and contributor on the station. Well, admitted he was a host on the station. I have appeared on the radio several times, and I think it lists me as someone who has contributed. He said, asked if he agreed with the racist and anti-Semitic material on Radio Erin, Mr. Musson replied, I believe in freedom of speech, and if somebody else wants to say something, then I am happy for them to say it. I think that was a very good reply there, Max. Did they quote you accurately there, saying that, about believing in freedom of speech?
Yeah, fairly closely. I did say words to that effect, and so that's one quotation that I'm entirely happy with, actually.
that's good. That's good. Last night, Longshanks declined to comment, but in a statement, Radio Erin said, "Our content is not intended for mass public consumption. It is created by nationalists for nationalists, with the intention of promoting virtue among our people and encouraging them to set a good example to others. Our content may not have this effect on non-nationalists, as it is not intended for their ears." Well, I'm pleased with that quote as well. That's a quote from our disclaimer. Finally, a Home Office spokesman said, "We are committed to stamping out extremism in all its forms and working with our international partners and internet companies to tackle extremist propaganda online." And as we said right at the beginning, we're not in the business of producing propaganda. If you want propaganda to show to the public, then you will find that somewhere else. You won't find it at Radio Erin. This is nationalist content produced for nationalists, not for the general public. We're not producing propaganda. Okay, that brings us to the end of the podcast, Max. Thank you very much for coming on. Have you got anything you'd just like to add there?
Pardon?
Thank you. Have you got anything else that you'd like to add there at the end?
No. I think we've pretty well talked this through, and I think that those people listening to the podcast will have had a very succinct and very extensive explanation of what our views are with regard to the subjects discussed and freedom of speech.
Yeah, far better than having a response to the journalist all cherry-picked and then put into the article. This is it. We have our own media here. We can respond to such articles. We can take our time over it and we can make ourselves clear about what it is that we are really saying. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with more Aryan Britannia for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great week ahead of you.
To the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.